Well, that is the point I was taking a shot at when I said, take Paul, for example. Paul has this, I don't know, some people say near-death experience in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and then one book earlier, I mean, if we go by the New Testament count, 1 Corinthians 15, he's talking about the resurrection of Jesus. My point was that it's long been acknowledged. I don't even know if there's a dissenter, but, I mean, I'm sure you'll find one. But what I'm saying is Paul recognized a categorical, a substantive difference between a resurrection appearance and, say, an angel saying to him, don't go to Macedonia, or go to Macedonia, that kind of thing. Or when he says, I had this, perhaps, near-death experience.
Where does he identify a categorical difference between them?
Where does he do what?
Paul. Yeah, where do you see Paul clearly delineating the difference between those two visions?
Let me give you an example. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1, and again in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 8, Paul says one of the marks of the apostle is to have seen the Lord. In 1 Corinthians 9, 1, he says, am I not an apostle? Have I not seen the Lord? Now, I know Acts is not written by Paul, but in Acts 1 and 2, right there at the beginning of the Christian church, where they're trying to pick a 12th person to come on the scene to take Judas's place, who committed suicide, they said, we have to pick an apostle who's been with us the whole time, but in particular, he has to be a witness of the resurrection. So now Acts is not Pauline, but the standard for apostle is, had to have seen the risen Jesus. Paul carries that in 1 Corinthians 9 and in 1 Corinthians 15 and says, I'm an apostle, I've seen Jesus. Nowhere in the New Testament do you see anything like, he must be an apostle, he had a dream, or he must be an apostle because he was healed of a serious disease.
He doesn't say that in 2 Corinthians 12 either. I mean, he says it's visions and revelations of the Lord, and he talks about a man, whether it's himself or someone else, actually seeing things in heaven. I don't see him seeing any difference or mentioning any difference between what this person experienced and what he experienced himself, says he experienced himself.
Because my point is, whatever is described in 2 Corinthians 12 is not the criteria for apostle. The question isn't, have you had a wonderful experience?
Obviously, the criteria for the apostle is to have seen Jesus Christ, as opposed to seeing the third heaven.
That's why there's a qualitative distinction.
The experience itself was different. You know what I mean? I mean, they may have been qualitatively or even causally the same kind of event.
If you're going to talk about the makeup of the experience itself,
right.
I think one of the things that have come out in recent research. Say, take Tom Wright's Resurrection of the Son of God, 750-page book, 500 pages of it is a linguistic argument that Paul in particular, but also the rest of the New Testament, that the teaching is that Jesus appeared bodily. Now, transformed, he calls it transformed physicality. To be sure, it's transformed. We're not arguing for every mole in the same place and every jot and tittle and every molecule and atom, but if you're arguing, okay, quantitatively, you're talking about what appeared. Qualitatively, you're talking resurrection appearance over dreams. The combination, if they're correct, the combination is that Jesus is different than all other dreams, and he's different than other resurrections, take Lazarus, because he was raised in a body never to die again. So even another qualitative sign that this is not like other resurrections.
Well, okay, so let me see if I understand what you're saying. You're saying that all the other communications from God in the book of Acts, for example, and in 2 Corinthians 12 were just dreams?
They could be a variety of things. They could be, like I said, possibly a near-death experience, maybe a dream. According to the New Testament, there are individuals, even the Old Testament, there are individuals who are physically raised from the dead and then they die again. So there are all kinds of experiences.
This has nothing to do with even resurrection, but I mean, you have Peter, for example, sitting on the roof and suddenly having the vision of heaven opening up,
sure,
and God communicating to him. I mean,
sure,
what do you think that was? Was that God actually talking to him, or was he hallucinating? Was he dreaming? What was that?
Well, I don't have any criteria to say he was hallucinating, but to me, if I were the critic, I would say, hang Acts 10, hang 2 Corinthians 12. I don't care about that stuff. I want to know, is the resurrection factual? I want to know if the resurrection occurred. Let's look at it from that viewpoint.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think that's the wrong... I mean, that kind of bracketing is problematic because we're still facing.
It's not problematic for the New Testament writer.
Peter didn't have, if that vision wasn't really a communication from God, that means something very substantive for the interpretation of the resurrection, the interpretation of Peter's experiences, and so forth. I mean, it's very important. You can't. I don't see how a Christian
doesn't care
about that.
Why is that important?
Yeah, I don't see where the
question. Let's say, for example, that you believe. I'm not saying you do, but let's just say you believe that when Peter had that vision of the communication from God, that was just a normal dream, and it wasn't really God talking to him. Well, now everything that all the doctrine that followed from that vision is now no longer from God. So that a lot of the stuff that fell from that was the abolition of the dietary requirements, for example.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what the early Christians were claiming about Jesus.
Position.
They didn't see Jesus in dreams or visions like that. That is not the initial post-resurrection appearances. They were seeing him in bodily form.
At least not the way they're described in Acts. But what I'm trying to get at is not what the possible explanation for the resurrection appearances were. I mean, that's a related issue. But the thing is there's a whole phenomenon going on back in the ancient world of these kinds of people sincerely believing that God is talking to them, that angels and gods and so forth are appearing to them. Pagans, Jews, and Christians, this was happening all the time, and it's not happening now at all.
Mm.
And I think this is problematic. Well, what explains this change in the whole atmosphere of the world, really?
If I may, that's also one difficulty that I have with Christianity myself. I mean, there are many, but that is one I've always found a little hurdle to have difficulty jumping over to, is that it all, to me, and I might be going off the wrong path here, Richard, forgive me, but it all seems a little bit like mythology to me. And earlier, Gary, I believe you're talking about the historical method and whatnot. And when you start looking at these mythological stories, you see these absolute fantastic stories. Nobody believes them today. And then with Christianity, you see a very similar motif with resurrection stories and healing the sick and curing blindness and things like this. And it just doesn't happen today. If it were happening today, at least in some verifiable way, that might be more evidence that Christianity is true, and I might take it. I might just take a closer look at it, if that's the right term.
Okay, I'm still not sure that I'm barking up the same tree you guys are, but let me take two brief shots: one resurrection and one today. The resurrection comet. You know, I would say now, Richard. I don't know if you know this about me, but I spent 10 years. Everybody likes to say they were the opposite of what they were for so many years, but I was not only skeptical for 10 years. I used to debate unbelievers. I used to debate Christians. I used to get them very, very upset with me. And in those days, I guess I would have drawn a blank at your question if we were fellow skeptics, and I would have said this. I would have said, hey, look, who cares what Acts 10 is? Who cares what 2 Corinthians 12 is? Let's just say, for the sake of the argument, the resurrection is the only, now this, I don't think this is true, but let's just say for the sake of the argument, the resurrection is the only evidential case we have. Sure, I might scratch my head and say, why don't we have other cases? But I have to answer the data for the resurrection. Now, just that comment in passing. Now, as far as today, I am currently working on a manuscript that, it's a small part of the manuscript, but I am trying to answer the question, do we see modern phenomena, anything like New Testament phenomena? And I have been collecting cases for, I don't know, maybe 10 years. Some of these are written up in medical journals. Some of these are written up other places. But as far as phenomena like New Testament phenomena, I don't know if I'm prepared to go out there and say people are being raised around the world like some Christians claim. But I do have some very clear cases. I have three cases of spontaneous remissions of cancer. I don't mean someone prays for them and 3 months ago later it's gone. I don't mean someone prays for somebody and they get chemo. I mean cancer in both cases. One, a guy was given a couple weeks to live. It was all over his body. This is all documented. He's prayed for, and when they go right back in for tests, there's nothing there. I biopsy tumors that do not have a single cancer cell when they go in. Now, you can say, well, I don't accept that stuff, but I do think it makes a claim to have a bridge. There are also two double-blind prayer studies, one done in San Francisco, one done in Kansas. Both have been written up in medical journals, secular, obviously, medical journals. And the conclusion for both of them is that prayer is part of the healing process and should be included. Now, the typical responses...
Psychological.
The right. typical responses, well, sure, if I believe somebody's praying for me or I think somebody's praying
right.
for me, I might get better. But this is a double-blind...
Feel better, in a way, yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was making a distinction. Yes, feeling better, but yes.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying it's a double-blind experiment. So I could just as easily say somebody's praying for me, I'm feeling better, or I'm feeling worse, so I must not be prayed for. But there's near-death experiences today. Evidence near-death experiences have been written up in no fewer than 10 different medical journals.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not concede that we don't see any phenomena today that might be supernatural.
I disagree with a lot of what you said.
I'm sure you do.
Yes,
you can go around and around on that.
Yeah.
Right, I'm just saying...
I want to try and stick to the one particular thing I'm trying to get at. Let's just assume, for example, that there are these genuine near-death experiences and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And I've read some of the literature. Near-death experiences in India, for example, involve going to the Hindu heaven and interacting with Hindu gods. Now, how do you explain that? Are you saying that all other religions are having fake near-death experiences and only Christians are having genuine ones?
Or is God wearing a different dress? Maybe God
sure.
is wearing a different garb. I don't know.
Well, good question. You guys may know that I just had a dialogue recently with Keith Augustine, I think a friend of your guys probably. And we just had a one-hour dialogue on this subject alone. And here's what I tried to point out on that question. When I talk about near-death experiences, I'm not talking about anything anybody reports. I don't throw out there someone who says, well, I had this great experience. I don't count when people say, I went down a tunnel, I saw a light. I don't count that if a Christian tells me that. I don't care if a Hindu, I don't count it when a Hindu tells me. I'm only interested in corroborative cases. There are a number of cases where a person dies or they're near death on the spot. We have a number of cases, by the way, with flat brain, flat heart, neither one in the same person. They're like that for a period of time, sometimes up to hours. And while they're out, they report something that happens a distance away. They claim to be above their body. They see, see the resuscitation attempt.
Remote viewing.
The remote viewing. Mm. But it's evidenced, enough evidenced, that this has been written up. Like I said, I'm sure I could get others
but
if
now,
I counted.
Now are you saying, though, that these corroborated accounts only happen for Christians and don't
I'm
happen
not.
For anyone else?
No, I'm not. I'm not
okay.
saying they only happen for Christians.
But I'm still, I don't understand how it is that you explain people who have these, even, let's assume there's a corroborated experience with the Hindu gods and they experience
right.
the Hindu gods.
No. That, there's
how
not,
do you deal with that?
There are no corroborative experiences that involve gods
okay.
of Christian
okay.
or Hindu. But there are corroborative experiences of people who claim to have experienced an afterlife. Well, afterlife would be a very important part of a supernatural worldview, would not be a very important part of an agnostic or an atheistic worldview. So if we're talking about worldview building, potential...
But that's one thing where almost all, I mean, there are very few exceptions, but almost all of those afterlife experiences are all of heaven.
Right.
Well,
so
that,
how does that fit in with the Christian...
Probably the majority of them are earthly. The person never gets to heaven.
I see.
And there are a number of hell cases. In fact, the radio station...
proportion, though, they're
that's true. Yeah. That's true. But the radio station that Keith and I were on, just a couple weeks before we were on, they had an atheist, a professor, a university professor, atheist all his life. He's not a little kid. And he was an atheist, and he went to hell. This is his experience. He said he went to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a Christian. Today he's a pastor. He left everything. He lost his university position, his wife. He's pastoring today and trying to work in third world countries. I'm not saying true or false. I'm just saying there is an example of a hell case, and he was on the radio same station we were on just before we were. But see, I don't put stock in the were they in heaven or hell cases. But I do think there's some good evidence that these people are living after the death of their physical body, at least minutes afterwards. And that's a theistic tenet. That's not an atheistic tenet.
Yeah, but that. This is getting well away then.
Well, it is, guys. But you're asking me
like
about
Peter,
you're
Peter
asking me about the phenomenon today, and I resisted going here, but you kept saying
yeah.
you wanted it, so I'm giving
well,
some.
Well, no, cases. I mean, actually,
well, it's very similar. It's very similar, actually, though, because of course we're still talking about because I think Richie brought it up earlier. I mean, even I guess you kind of went there too, but accepting these the resurrection. Why should we even accept it in the first place? So,
right.
If we bring up evidences of supernatural events, that kind of would lead to the idea that supernatural events do occur. So, I can see how that would be related. So, I don't think we're too far off.
I would have brought this up on my own. That's why, when you first raised it, I kept saying, basically, do you really want to go here? I know it's going to take us away. I'm just saying, if you broaden the picture, I don't think it hurts Christianity at all.
Right.
Right.
Hey,
I understand the distinction between using, you can say it's evidence
right.
without saying that
for
it's
something beyond this world,
or that it can't be explained by other worldviews. I understand
yeah.
that. And I think we can, I didn't quite get where I wanted to go with that one, but I don't want to take up all the time with it.
In one sentence, I'm just saying the resurrection is not hanging out there in space. It has some other things that we need to consider.
Yeah, certainly.
Well, let me throw something
in
if I could.
Away from historical stuff.
One second, Rich. I think Mike wants to say something.
Let me just throw something in here. It seems to me Richard might be getting around to it, and I think Reginald, maybe you as well, with the principle of analogy, that if it doesn't happen today, it probably didn't happen.
No, not at all.
I apologize.
I wasn't going there in particular.
No.
But
I do think some of it does happen today. You know, we could say that. But I think when we talk about some of the, if you're saying that people were having visions and dreams of other deities or people back
right.
then, yeah, I don't think we can deny that. However, these were different. What I'm saying is what Christians saw after the ascension, and I'll put Paul in that category too, but even his appearance was a little bit different than what other Christians, like even Stephen later on in Acts 7, when he's being stoned, he sees Jesus, but no one else sees him. He's having some sort of a vision. It's a private occurrence. You
right.
want to call that a hallucination?
Could be.
I don't
he's getting
think
stoned,
so,
right?
But we could postulate a number of different explanations mm-hmm. for that. But the thing is, what the disciples originally saw, they understood that in different terms than these other experiences, because they're interpreting that in terms of a bodily resurrection. I think Paul's clear of this in 1 Corinthians 15, in Romans 8:11, and Philippians 3:21. That it was a bodily resurrection, something that occurred to Jesus' corpse. Whereas their later Christians, when they see him, when they're seeing him in the sky or in a dream or in a vision, it's a little bit different. And the people who of other religions, like 125 years later when Philostratus, or I'm sorry, 225 years later when Philostratus is talking about Apollonius, he's not appearing in bodily form. He's appearing to one of his disciples in a dream, and Philostratus writes that there were, right at, toward the end of his biography, that there were a number, he was aware of a number of stories of people who claimed that Apollonius appeared to them, but the word that he uses there is daimonios, and it's this ethereal type of appearance that they're having, so he's appearing kind of like a ghost to them, or like a phantom.
And the text does specifically say a dream.
Yes, it does. The guy was in a dream and seeing, and then he woke up and he proclaimed his.
It was also
that he had seen
it was
Apollonius.
It was 200 years after Apollonius lived, not like 2 weeks later.
Right. Yeah.
So this is quite different, and no one's claiming an empty tomb and things like this. So we've got one of the minimal facts is an empty tomb. And then these guys are claiming resurrection, and within the context of Second Temple Judaism. Resurrection meant that something had occurred to the corpse.
Well, this is quite different
than what they're saying later on concerning these other deities and other people.
Yeah.
They're not resurrected in terms of their corpse coming back to life. And I think that's something that is much different from what the original disciples were teaching. Even the post-ascension appearances of Jesus, where they like to Paul on the road to Macedonia and everything, it's quite different than what we find the original disciples saying happened to Jesus.